York City Centre. A bustling, busy city visited by hundreds of tourists every week. York is a prosperous place and a desirable city to live in, with some of the highest housing prices in the north. While property in York climbs in value, the number of rough sleepers on York streets is on the rise again. Walking through York, it doesn't take long to see homelessness. You can see anywhere from 5 to 15 rough sleepers on a late night just walking through the city. Homelessness is, of course, much more than rough sleeping, and we will distinguish between rough sleeping, begging, and true homelessness a little later. But firstly, I wanted to understand why homelessness is more complex than many of us think, and what we do really think of when we imagine homelessness. It seems accurate to say that when we think about the homeless, many of us often think of something very remote from everyday society. Homeless people are often thought of as threatening or dangerous. I spoke with Emma, the community fundraiser from York charities SASH, Safe and Sound Homes. And she told me about her experiences with homeless stereotypes.
And I don't know if it's because homeless people do very often have mental health issues, and if you're, you know, if you're a child, you're encouraged to be scared of them.
Yeah.
And I know that when I've done talks to children and in schools and to scouts, and I say to them, "What do you think homeless looks like?" They draw pictures of people with like stink marks coming off them, and like people shouting. And I think that's the idea that you have, but it's just a lack of education, and it's. I mean, what we try and do all the time is challenge that idea of what people think a homeless person looks like.
As with all stereotypes, this is damaging because it means we put everyone in one box. And these stereotypes are problematic because they are usually uneducated assumptions. One of the first things that became apparent very early in making this documentary is how little we understand about the prominence of homelessness and the organisations working against it.
Are you aware that there is a homelessness problem in York?
I've seen a few homeless people on my nights out, but apart from that, no.
Yes, I mean, you always see them on a night out.
No, I did not know that.
Are you aware of any major charities or minor charities that help with homelessness, either in York or nationally?
Nope. No.
The one that I think of when you say homelessness is probably the Salvation Army, but apart from that, no.
Can you think of any options for anyone that is homeless around York? Where they can go, who they can talk to?
No, I'm afraid I don't know that.
Not really, no.
We just listened to a handful of students from the University of York, but a lack of understanding, even a lack of empathy towards the problem of homelessness, is rife among York's local population too. On walking around York, we might think that homelessness, at least rough sleeping, is more of an issue than it might really be. This is because some rough sleepers, or those appearing to be rough sleepers, are in fact beggars.
During the day, you'll probably find that the majority of people actually on the streets are not necessarily rough sleeping. They tend to be people who possibly are in hostels, and it's become a bit of a second way of life for them that they sit out during the day.
This is Jason Angus, who I met back in March. Jason volunteers his spare time to help the homeless and rough sleepers in York. We should take a moment to define some terms. A rough sleeper is someone who sleeps on the streets or in places hidden away, like warehouses and under bridges, typically in cities. Rough sleeping is dangerous and unhealthy. One young homeless man I spoke to, who sleeps rough, told me that he sleeps during the day and stays awake during the night because it is safer. Numbers of rough sleepers in an area are difficult to count up. Jason told me that the true rough sleepers in York will find warmth during the day, going to places that provide breakfast or finding shelter indoors, like at the train station. Another figure that is difficult to calculate is the number of people temporarily sleeping in lots of different places, going between friends' and relatives' houses, for example. And this is called sofa surfing. Sofa surfing can be as dangerous as rough sleeping. Rough sleepers and sofa surfers are part of a major problem called hidden homelessness. People who are homeless but are undetected or overlooked are then less likely to get the help they need. At the most basic level, the very thing that homeless people lack is four walls around them, a home, a private interior of any sort. And yet walking around York It is clear that we seem to erect walls of our own around the homeless on the streets. We give them a privacy of a kind by ignoring them, turning a blind eye, distancing ourselves from them. Only by breaking down these imaginary walls, by approaching the homeless, can we begin to tackle the problem. I join Jason Angus on a street walk, which he and his volunteer group do roughly 3 times a week. It was clear that Jason thinks that forming personal bonds with homeless individuals is really important. In 2015, Jason set up TORCH, standing for Together Our Resources Can Help. TORCH is a York-based volunteer group which seeks to provide care, guidance and resources to people who are vulnerable, sleeping rough or homeless. On the street walk, I had a chance to ask Jason for his advice on how we can personally help a homeless person we walk past on the street.
It's very easy just to throw money, but the first thing you should do is just pop down and have a little chat with them. Yeah. Say hello, just ask them a few questions, just say how they're doing, and ask them if they want something to eat. If you can afford to, and or just offer them a coffee or a bottle of water or something.
I also spoke with Emma from SASH.
I think from a human point of view, just making eye contact is just nice for anybody, to just make them feel like they exist. Mm-hmm. From a practical point of view, I would always, before I started working at SASH, give homeless people money or go and buy them a coffee or, you know, get them some food. Since working at SASH, the problem with that is that you're almost facilitating the homelessness. So if you're giving money or you're giving clothes, as nice as it is, and as much as you'd want that if you were on the street, it's just helping them be homeless. And I think if you really want to help someone that's on the streets, find out about the local services, find out where they can go, and give them information. Have a chat with them, like ask them what they've tried, what's happening.
Personal acts of kindness can be extremely effective, and I was surprised by how far-reaching the effects of a small group's time and generosity can be. Of course, what we tend to think of when we imagine homeless aid are larger organisations. Here in York, small organisations are making invaluable difference to the lives of Rust sleepers and the homeless. Donating to a charity like SASH is a way of translating personal kindness to organised, on-the-ground action. SASH focuses on giving safe accommodation to 16 to 25-year-olds, and they have 100 host homes across the York area in which living expenses of the individual are covered. I asked Emma about the importance of donations, securing support from York residents, and how charitable she's found York so far.
It is the kind of place, I think, once you can get into that community, it's very rewarding, but it's getting into that community that's difficult. When I first started, I was doing loads of community fairs at churches and schools and street festivals and anywhere that would have me, really, just to kind of spread the word about what we do. And I was getting a lot of, having quite heated discussions with people that were saying, well, there isn't a homeless problem in York, so, you know, why would we give to your charity? And once they're educated about it and what we, you know, the difference between that we have compared to other homeless charities and what we do in our approach, and you know, you just throw some facts and figures at them, it changes their opinion. And then I find that once you've got someone on board, they're really loyal and they really do a lot of work and they talk about what we do and they become almost like ambassadors for SASH.
It seems fair to say that organisations can do the most effective work because they are indeed organised. Efforts of smaller groups, like TORCH, seems to be limited by the fact that several groups might be repeating the same work. Jason himself spoke to me about the importance of organised and centralised aid work.
And one of the biggest concerns is the fact there's a lot of sort of groups out here who do fantastic things, but they don't work in coordination with each other. So you can find, I can walk around on a night and suddenly find another group has already been out and handed out socks, gloves and hot chocolate. Mm-hmm. And then there's another group following me around. So this is why, sort of their request, I created TORCH to try and create a centralised group. If everyone can work together and actually coordinate, it would be amazing. Because then I wouldn't have to come out, well, we wouldn't have to come out 3 times a week just to make sure the guys always have a hot drink, because I know that someone else is out Sunday, someone else is out Monday.
What we might think of as the largest, perhaps even the most powerful organisation in a discussion of homelessness is the City Council. Some of us think that personal and charitable humanitarian work is not required because the responsibility of helping the homeless lies with the local authority. I wanted to find out more about the work that York Council does to prevent and help homelessness. I spoke with Becky Ward from York City Council, who works as a service manager in housing options and homelessness. Becky told me that the main responsibility of the local authority are families, or what the law calls people in priority need. The people that are prioritised are called statutory homeless. She also told me that the core duty of the council is to prevent homelessness in the first instance. I found out that York City Council have around 18 people who work full-time in a department relating to homelessness. Becky told me what actually happens in the process of the council assigning housing.
Somebody who, for example, has a private rented property and is given a 2-month notice to quit, if they come in on day one, then we can work with them to either keep them in their property. So, for example, it might be because they can't afford to pay their rent. So we would check their benefits, maybe help make sure they'll get the right housing benefit, maybe come to an agreement to pay off any arrears, and hopefully they would be able to stay in the property that they're in. Mm-hmm. If we can't do that, then it is possible that we could use the waiting list system, the North Yorkshire Home Choice, to house somebody as potentially homeless. We know they're going to become homeless. We would have to house them if they became homeless, so let's do it before they become homeless and they move in a planned way.
But housing is simply not available some of the time. We spoke to Rachel Mascal, Labour MP for York Central, who told us about the problems regarding inaccessible housing in York. She told us that social housing in York is dwindling and that its future does not look good.
The reality is we do not have enough social housing, and I don't believe the council now are going far enough in addressing that real housing crisis we have here in York. So one, we need a greater supply of housing, and that housing has got to be social housing, accessible housing, supported housing. Now, I have been really scrutinising the government ministers about how we get social housing built, because their whole focus is on houses to buy, and therefore they're talking about a variety of schemes that they're introducing to try and give access to buying houses, but actually that's excluding people, and it will make the problem worse when we're talking about the right to buy social housing.
When I spoke to Becky Ward in February, she estimated that around 1,800 people were on the housing waiting list in York. She told me that to be housed, a person would have to meet 5 criteria. They would have to be eligible under immigration law, be homeless or at risk of being homeless within 28 days, be considered as in priority need, for example, a youth, someone who is pregnant or has children, be unintentionally homeless, and have a local connection, a link to York. Some of these criteria seem stickier and more problematic than others.